previously on Box Cutters.
Guess what? It wasn't rolling. Fuck.
It wasn't rolling.
Fuck.
We lost all of that magic.
I know.
All of that magic.
Do it
gone.
Again. We can do it again.
Are you ready to go?
Yeah.
Believe that.
Hello and welcome to Box Cutters, episode 307. It's the time we go. My name is Josh Canal. To my left, Dave Lawson. And to my right, Brett Cropley.
I just learned to do that sound with my mouth with water.
Thank you. You are a man of so many talents, Dave.
It's almost a bird as well. If you listen carefully, I can do a bird, I think, with it. It's like a finch or something.
If only there were... Can you go into Australia's Got Talent with that?
With this, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hey, wasn't it a Leif Whistler that won the first one?
Yeah. Yeah, it would just be the water bubbler guy.
Yeah.
Water bubbler guy.
Yeah, easy. I can do heaps of sounds. It's heaps of sounds.
In this episode of Box Cutters, my voice is going to be the deepest thing in the world.
Wow.
This episode of Box Cutters is all about television. Have you heard the last episode that was also all about television? So there's a theme, I think.
Mm-hmm.
307 episodes in, pretty much every single one has been about television, except for the bits where you've gone off topic, Brett.
The Box Cutters Book Club.
Yes, in which Courtney Hocking went off topic. But I still blame you for that.
Okay.
In this episode of Box Cutters, we're going to review a kind of foreign language kind of show.
Mm-hmm.
Lilyhammer. We'll be reviewing that. We will also be speaking about a kind of foreign language kind of music song contest.
Nil point. Did anybody come through with nil point?
No, it came very close, though. Very close. It was pretty dire in terms of voting for some countries. But we will talk about Eurovision later on. Dave's done his homework. We'll have one thing. We'll have a little bit of pork. As always, though, let's kick things off with the Box Cutters News. Dave Lawson, one of the most important people in the history of television, passed away during the week. Were you aware of this?
Oh,
Eugene Polly, the inventor of the first wireless remote control for television.
He's changed. Passed away. He's changed a lot of lives.
He really has. He's made a lot of people fatter.
So did he invent the? What is it, radio waves or how's it, infrared?
I don't think he invented infrared. Kind of worked more like a flashlight, the one that he invented, and somebody else invented one a year later that worked a lot better. But his was the first, and it was for Zenith TVs in the United States. That being said, in the United States, they often say things are the first, and then we find out that they're not. So... look, I'm going with the New York Times on this. New York Times said that he was the first person to invent the television remote control. I'm going with that.
Why isn't this done on remote controls? A little button on the television that you walk up to the television and press it and your remote goes beep, 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 beep.
They used to have that.
That should have taken off.
Are you blaming Eugene Polly for this?
Eugene.
Yeah, blame the dead man.
If he could have hung around a little bit longer, he might have come up with a little locator button on the TV. Well, that's sad news.
That is sad news. He was 96 years old. Brett Cropley, can you tell us a little bit about this Hollywood mogul who is in talks to? Is he buying the Nine Network?
Well, he's throwing it out there. He's running it up the flagpole and see who salutes. His name is Harry Sloan. He's from MGM, the former chairman there. That would be the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Film Company.
Never heard of it.
And he's talking with CVC and Goldman Sachs. I hadn't realised that Goldman Sachs were currently involved with the ownership of Channel 9. here in Australia, but in talks with them about possibly taking over a controlling share of the Nine Network.
Actually, Nine Entertainment Company.
Nine Entertainment Company. And who knows where it may go from there. Actually, having somebody that's worked in entertainment, either here or overseas, it's a pretty revolutionary concept for an Australian TV network these days.
So you would encourage this sale, Brett?
I think he'd have more idea about how to run a TV network than an investment company does.
Look, I don't know why anybody would buy into a TV station, especially an Australian TV station, at this stage of the game.
It's unless, a bargain?
Unless it is an absolute bargain and you can still make money from it.
Potentially, like, there's certain funding and loans coming due fairly soon, maybe just in July, around about $2.8 billion that the Nine Entertainment Company have to come up with to service their loans. So they're potentially in a very weak position to be able to hold out for much more than maybe a bargain basement price.
In terms of ratings, it's a good time for them to sell. The Voice has been doing very well for them.
And the Olympics coming up.
The Olympics is coming up, and London 2012 is going to be huge for Channel 9. It might be a good time for them to show that they are on the up and up if they're trying to make a sale.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it won't be as much of a bargain as it would have been, say, 8 months ago.
Mm.
Let's speculate. This is Speculation Hour. You've just tuned in to your Speculation Hour. Look, Harry Sloan, I don't know if he'd be good or if he'd be bad. I think it's a bad time to invest in television networks unless you have a really great plan of how to future-proof the concept. Just briefly in the news, Christopher Guest is pitching a new sitcom to NBC Universal. Christopher Guest, the man who created, he's one of the members of This Is Spinal Tap, and created Best in Show,
Waiting for Guffman,
Mighty Folk,
correct?
Guffman,
yeah, and A Mighty Wind.
Mighty Wind.
So he's pitching a show called Family Tree, revolving around a man who sets out to learn more about his family roots after his great aunt dies. Tell me about why video recorders are likely to not be legal anymore, Brett.
This article is interesting because it does talk about video recorders, but I believe they're actually talking about digital recorders and PVRs, all that sort of stuff. And in fact, this is a slightly different format. This is almost going towards Europtus, almost live footy kind of service. So it's a digital video recorder service called Primetime Anywhere that automatically cuts out the ads from any of the four major broadcast networks in the States for any programs over the last 8 days. So I guess you pay for this service and you can watch any of those shows without the ads in them. And so the networks don't get to count those towards their viewership figures and don't get to sell to the people watching that. So a suit has been filed in the US in an LA federal court.
Hang on. Why would I pay someone to do something that is largely illegal that I can already do for largely illegal ways myself for free now without having to wait 8 days or whatever?
Because it's a rolling archive of the last 8 days.
Okay, it's the last 8 days, but it's still not live now.
Well, it means that you don't need to have the technology yourself. You don't have to have the storage, and you can just go in whenever you want to. It makes it easy for the nans and pops to be able to avail themselves of the service.
And in their system, are they then handing over money that they've collected to the content creators?
No.
So it's not like a Spotify model where you pay a monthly fee and get to listen to music
and royalties of some sort. Not that's spelt out here. No,
right. So it's essentially just criminal.
Well,
it's pretty much theft.
See, we've got the same question here with the Optus watch the footy on your phone kind of deal. Is it criminal? We've had findings for both sides of the argument at various levels of the courts here.
I think the Optus TV Now thing, though, wasn't the idea there that if you were with Optus, it would be free?
I think.
Whereas this is a service that you actually have to purchase. So you're paying
money.
It's
free as part of the service that you're paying for with Optus.
Yeah, but it's included. It's just an add-on to a service that you already have. It is a fine line.
The question is there about are people signing up to Optus, their TV archiving service, just for the footy so they can watch it 20 seconds after it's gone out live, or are they signing up for the service and the footy's just a happy coincidence?
The bigger differences between the Optus TV Now case and this case is that with Optus, the ads are still in there. So advertisers who have paid to have their ads seen by people who are watching these shows still have their ads seen by people who are watching these shows. Mm-hmm. So here, people are paying money to have the ads removed from the shows. So the advertisers are not getting... Sorry, what was it?
That's part of the service.
Right. Yeah. So the advertisers are not getting what they paid for. The content owners, the content creators, are not being paid despite the fact that people are paying for their content. How is that not just theft? It's so completely different to the TV Now case.
But they also have the model in the States with Hulu and your online
where
viewing services.
Yeah, where
do they serve up the same ads, or do they have their own ads?
They have their own ads, but
they pay a royalty back.
It pays. It's owned by the content creators. It's owned by NBC Universal and Friends.
Mm-hmm.
So
the cast of the 90s.
Yeah, the cast of Friends.
Smash it. Sitcom.
So Hulu does pay money back to the people that they get content from. And for example, you cannot watch CBS produced shows on Hulu. They link to them, and then you end up going to the CBS website.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, again, completely different.
But it's a closer model.
No, it's not a closer model, because money is still going to the content creators. So it's not a closer model at all.
Apart from the money, it's closer.
apart from the fact that everything else that you've mentioned is illegal and this is theft, they're almost identical.
Is it theft?
Yes. Not only is it theft, it's immoral. You're charging people for a service that you have no business charging. If you came over to my house and I paid you like $50 to go through all my VHS tapes and dub them from one cassette to another cassette and take the ads out, that is fine.
If I pay you $50,
yeah,
that's fine.
That is fine.
In the case where I do all the work, taking the ads out.
No, I'm paying you.
You're taking the ads out. Oh, you're paying me $50
to take the ads out.
Okay,
you're so bad at business. And so what you're saying?
So you want tapes with the shows, but with the ads out?
But with the ads out
on videotape.
On videotape.
Mm-hmm.
For $50.
$50
per tape, or is this a job?
This is going nowhere.
I reckon you'd have to do 5 hours' work.
It's interesting in dignity that I'm hearing in your voice about the illegality of it. Given that you're not as passionate about torrent piracy,
I'm not paying anyone for that. The thing about torrent piracy is it is people doing things for other people for free.
Mm-hmm.
That's TV torrent piracy. People are doing things for other people for free.
So it's a community.
It's a community, and the shows that I like get their money by me buying the box sets.
So what you're saying is if I come around to your house and copy all the tapes from one tape to the other for $50 and pocket it myself and don't give it to the people whose shows I've copied, That's wrong.
No, I was just moving past that, Dave, because what I'm saying is there is a huge difference between people doing things illegally and not charging for them. So it is a community of illegality that has a basis in people being dissatisfied with the way the networks work, mm-hmm. and somebody taking advantage of
setting up a business model that profits off.
You don't like someone's on the take.
Yeah,
for this, they shouldn't be.
They shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Anyway, that ended up being a very long rant, but that is the Box Cutters News.
I'm gonna give you the sucker. They got some demands. I'm thinking Lilyhammer.
You give us Aldo DeLucci, and we'll send you to the goddamn North Pole. Why the f*** do you want to go there?
Didn't you see the Olympics in 94? Clean air, fresh white snow, gorgeous broads. It was beautiful.
You must be the new neighbor.
Giovanni Hankrinson. Oh, you're in the postal service.
I'm chief of police.
Okay. You got me living in the project next to the chief of police.
Driving a sewing machine. I gave you
Aldo f***ing Delucci.
Frankie the Fixer Taliano works for the mob in New York City. When he's passed over as the family head and becomes the subject of a hit, he turns state's evidence, testifies against the family, and goes into witness protection. His one condition is to testify is that he not be relocated anywhere in the US, and instead he chooses Lillehammer, Norway, as his new home, having seen how beautiful it was during the 1994 Winter Olympics. Arriving there, he discovers an inhospitable landscape with a small town ruled by bureaucratic restrictions, with the chief of police as a neighbour in his new, less than salubrious home. Dogged by paranoid, incompetent policing and incorruptible government workers, he has to work a little harder to get around the system to set up his new life and earn a living. But with determination and a little of his hard man experience, he prevails. Stephen Van Zandt, Sylv from The Sopranos, and Lil Stephen from the E Street Band, plays Johnny Henriksen, a.k.a. Frankie the Fixer, with a cast unknown pretty much outside of Europe. It was created by Anne Bjornstadt and Elif Skodvin, and written by them and Stephen Van Zandt. And also Van Zandt is the music coordinator on the show, so there's some definite cool in the bands used in the series. The series of 8 episodes was the first released by Netflix in the United States and has been commissioned for a second season to go into production after Van Zandt's done with touring with Bruce Springsteen.
Now, this wasn't produced by Netflix, though. This was produced by the Norwegian television station NRK. Is that right?
Well, in fact, produced by a German production house. And first broadcasts on NRK.
Okay, so NRK, Norwegian Rubicon TV, in association with Netflix and German-owned distributor 7-1 International.
Yes.
Is how I read it off the Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
This is a fish-out-of-water story. Van Zandt plays the mobster who is sent to essentially, let's call it Sicily, Alaska, but it's full of Norwegians.
They substituted Norway for Alaska.
By choice. And although he is trying to learn the language on the way there, he seems to have done no research on the city of Lillehammer itself. And so is constantly surprised, but manages to understand people when they speak Norwegian.
Mm. He's a very fast learner.
Very fast learner, but...
But he still speaks English.
Yeah.
And everybody understands him.
Well, yeah. I like that convention they've set up. I didn't find it jarring at all that he's speaking English, they're speaking Norwegian, there's some things with subtitles, some don't have subtitles. It flowed along quite well to me, but I felt freezing watching it.
They do get the cold coming through the screen very well.
I had to turn the heater on, and then I did have to turn the heater on and get a jacket because it makes you feel cold. It looks amazing though. I love that it's set in Norway. It reminded me a bit of Fargo at times.
Well, the chief of police, the actress who plays the chief, reminds me of the cop in Fargo.
Frances McDormand.
Yes,
McDormand.
Yeah. Which might just be about the hair, but also kind of the mannerisms and that kind of workaday cop attitude, I guess, that she's got.
I do like the locals as well, that sort of okie dokie attitude that they've got. It's all, especially there's the creepy counsellor in it who works at the job centre.
And I'd say, so this guy, the counsellor who works at the job centre, is a very creepy character. He is sexually awkward and possibly a pedophile. And the creepiness comes out in very subtle, very slow ways, and in a way that is, it seems to me like it is meant to be humorous, but just makes me feel a little bit sick.
It does. I found him funny.
You found it funny?
Until you sort of find out more about him. You think he's
But I think from the outset, he's like the real officious bureaucrat who just won't, like he won't take a bribe, and he gets all indignant about, what are you trying to bribe a government official? We'll put it down to cultural differences. So I think that creepiness goes along with that. That's kind of wielding any power that he has as well.
And his girls only self-defense courses that he runs.
Did you guys both like the show?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I found the show just tedious.
Really?
And I wouldn't watch it past three episodes. I've only had a chance to see two. But the first two made me feel so condescended to.
Really?
I found that the jokes were fairly obvious. It felt like a really bad cross between Northern Exposure and Analyze This. The idea of a gangster being a source of mockery and the simple townsfolk of a far northern city also just being a source of mockery doesn't fill me with any sense of wonder. There's no character that I can see this foreign land through the eyes of. And that's one of the things in a Fish Out of Water story is you've either got the perspective of the townsfolk or you've got the perspective of the visitor. But here, unless you're a gangster who's turned on the mob, or you live in Norway, you don't have the perspective of either. Now, this was made for a Norwegian audience, and I have a feeling that in Norway, this would absolutely kill.
And it did. It had record-breaking figures.
I think one fifth of the nation watched the first episode of this show, which is just extraordinary numbers. And I believe that if I could actually get the perspective of one of those two parties, I would think this show was great. But I don't know anything about life in Norway. So for me, I need to be introduced to these things as someone who I can empathise with, and I can't empathise with Frankie the Fixer.
Yeah, I think I do agree with you. I think it could have been pushed a little bit further for me. I did enjoy it, and maybe it's because it looks so great, and, you know, some of those opening shots with the train travelling through Norway, you want to be on that train, and it looks so fantastic, and I thought, you know, it looked great. But there was a bit too eager. Oh, really? We're in it pretty quickly. He's straight into it. He's straight into the mob guy around town, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he's walking around in snow in his Italian loafers, and he's taking his revolver out to hunt a wolf.
Because that's what he knows. He's the Fixer. I didn't come to this expecting it to be a comedy at all, and thinking back on it, like, I don't think there were any laugh out loud moments for me at all across the series.
Right, so that makes it either an unfunny comedy or a not very dramatic drama.
But I think the story does actually take you on a journey, and maybe I should call you on the rule of three.
Oh, no, don't call me on the rule of three, because I can. If it takes you on a journey, where does it take you?
Well, it takes you back to the States at one point, and so it's hard to talk about this stuff without giving spoilers.
So you're saying it physically takes you on a journey, rather than taking you on an emotional storytelling journey.
No, but then as the locals, so there's a romantic interest there, and it's propelled along by circumstances, and then kind of the locals come to know what he's actually really like. Is he's fairly good at kind of pulling off not being Frankie the Fixer and being. What's his face? Henriksen.
So
Henriksen.
So by pretending to be someone else, he goes on a journey of self-discovery and finds out that he is...
He doesn't change.
Right. So he doesn't change. So we don't actually go on any fucking journey, do we? Do we, Brent? He doesn't change.
He's on a train every episode.
I'm guessing the town of Lilyhammer doesn't change. So nothing changes. So where do we go? What journey are we going on here, Brent?
I like the Norwegian cast. I think they're great. I really enjoyed
watching them. Norwegian cast is great.
And I'd watch it for them.
You know what I really enjoyed? I really enjoyed hearing other languages, other accents, and seeing other countries' gestures, which we don't get to see that much. You know, we've got shows on SBS that we can watch, and the BBC is starting to buy a lot of drama from that part of the world. But it is few and far between. Like, it's a culture that we're not familiar with. I think that is a large part of it.
Yeah, get a hot water bottle, rug up, and watch it. And that's why I was indoors. It was raining,
and that's another kind of Fargo similarity there. Yeah. That Fargo, like North Dakota's all snowed in, and everybody's rugged up and stomping around in snow.
Yeah,
or putting bodies in woodcutters in snow.
Well, that's why I liked it. But it is slightly cheesy, isn't it?
I find it really cheesy. I find Stephen Van Zandt's portrayal to be clowny.
Yeah,
and so it doesn't carry across the idea of, well, this is a dangerous man. I can imagine it would be hard for Stephen Van Zandt as well, who was not an actor before The Sopranos, got the role of Silvio on The Sopranos, and then his next role is pretty much exactly the same role, to try to play it differently when Silvio was such a perfect character for this. Silvio was a serious man who knew how to make light of a situation if the situation called for it, but also knew how to take care of business.
But he was also a consigliere rather than being an action man, being a fixer, being a hitman.
And it just doesn't work for me. You know what else really shit me? I'm getting very angry. I don't know why. The policeman, the dumb policeman.
Mm. The paranoid terrorist are at our doorstep.
Yeah. I saw no need for that. It's like they're forcing comic relief into what should already be a lighthearted comedy.
Well, Lilyhammer is it's sold as a dramedy, isn't it? That's what they'd call it. Would you call it a dramedy?
I would call it a light comedy.
Like, yeah, I would have preferred it to be a drama than get rid of all the comedy.
Get rid of all the comedy.
Let's get a bit real with it.
Talk about how hard it actually is for someone to relocate.
Yeah.
How hard it actually is for someone to involve themselves in a completely foreign community.
But this isn't. It's not a standard somebody immigrates to another country. It's a guy that knows how to get things done. He's the fixer. And so he goes in. It doesn't matter what the culture is. He still has this expectation that he's going to go be able to go in and swing some of his weight around and get what he wants.
Yeah, but I think it's lazy storytelling. And I know a thing or two about lazy storytelling because I've been watching Sons of Anarchy.
Bonjour tout le monde. Bienvenue à Box Cutters. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Box Cutters. This is Toby Sullivan displaying his bilingual prowess on the best TV podcast that I've ever encountered.
Look, we've covered Eurovision quite a lot on this show in the past almost 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's probably our lowest key coverage of...
Well, we didn't do a live show because I got so angry last year at the live show when people were talking over the songs. But this year, I think it deserves a special mention because I thought the production was exceptional as far as a giant TV show goes. If you compare it to the Oscars, if you compare it to the Emmys, if you compare it to the Logies, if you compare it to the BAFTAs, if you compare it to any large-scale extravaganza one-night-only show, this was just an amazing display of how to keep entertainment going and how to keep people excited. I was really, really impressed. Dave Lawson.
It looked great. I saw both heats, watched both heats and the final. And I loved it. The hosts, I thought, were fantastic.
The Azerbaijani hosts.
Azerbaijani hosts. I did like the banter and the jokes they had written for them, which I'm not sure, they just didn't work. But it's great. Like, what were some of them? It was like, you know, this is Eurovision's really old now. It's like, what are you saying? I'm not old. And then it just didn't. But I really loved. I loved watching. And they're so enthusiastic.
Was it like a 15-year-old? The guy was looking very, very
hairy. So enthusiastic, and I enjoyed watching them, and it looked fantastic as well.
It looked great. So this was in a purpose-built stadium.
The Crystal Dome or something.
Yeah.
It's
one of four buildings
in
Baku.
So they did that over the last year.
Yes.
They
really did. They built it especially for Eurovision. And if you take into account the all of the video postcards that they had during the show, it is one of four buildings in Baku.
The flame towers.
There are three buildings that look identical, and then there's this building. And that's it.
There's some nice looking buildings too. And again, sorry to go back to Lilyhammer, but you watch these sort of, it's got the snow and the lights and you think, oh, I'd like to be over there in Europe. And I bet Sam Pang and Julia Zemiro they were anchoring it for SBS here.
Yeah, and they did a great job.
You could hear the glee in their voice when they Sweden won and they realised that next year they'd be going to Sweden. Didn't they?
Yeah. I think they were pretty.
When Azerbaijan won, I had no idea where that was, but it would have been lovely to go there. It looked great, and you could go visit the flame tower buildings.
I think I've seen enough of the flame tower buildings.
I've seen them. And the winner, Loreen from Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear her song? Was
it? I did. I thought it was one of the three best songs of the night.
And she does. I've been doing that dance move she does, you know, where she shuffles up and down.
Yeah, she's an extraordinary dancer. Extraordinary.
She had it all.
Now, this is also, I think Australian Idol and producers of talent shows, in that respect, could learn a thing or two from the producers of the Eurovision Song Contest. This was produced by the same team who did Germany's Eurovision Song Contest last year.
It did look very similar to that.
So it was the same team, but they had taken all the lessons that they learned, all the mistakes that they made last year, and fixed them up. And this is how you get good at things, is by repetition.
Do they have cameras on octocopters or something flying around? Because like you'd never see any cranes for the cameras, but it's in there and it's going around and around them and...
I don't know how they did it, but it was magical.
I'm kind of kicking myself now that I wasn't at home with a swivel chair and I could have played to like a hybrid voice at home thing. So as soon as I heard the beat or the song, I'd turn around and that would count as 12 votes. And if I didn't turn around, I could have had my own scoring system at home. This is... Maybe there's a product there, like a little button swivel chair that you can just, you know... take anywhere with you.
I think your talents are wasted doing doing TV shows from your own shed, Dave.
That's what I should be inventing.
I think you should be inventing chairs.
That swivel
around at the push of a button.
And at the same time you press that button, it'll tell you where your remote control is located and your keys are located.
You don't want to put it all in one package. You don't want to put it all in one package, Dave. You want to split these things up so they have to keep giving you money.
Sweden was the clear winner, I think. I mean, she blitzed it. What, it was like 100, won by 100 points. I don't know who the last person to do that was.
There were...
Probably last year, was it?
About 2 years ago, there was an outright winner quite early on. Yeah. I think Lena from Germany, yeah. What did you think of Sam and Julia's interviews backstage?
Up to par.
Yeah, oh, look, I enjoyed them. It'd be great fun interviewing. I was watching that thing. It would be great fun to interview these people because a lot of them take themselves so seriously, I think. Do they understand there's we go over there, or is this the known thing that everyone in Europe thinks we're all having a laugh at?
Well, I'm
your
not,
dances and
but you're not having a laugh, Dave. You just talked about how great Sweden was as a performer.
And oh, great! But there's a few other. Well, I mean, the Turkish song where they all sort of transform their outfits into a boat.
That was just shit. But I think that was
like
that
dancing was quite, bats.
Yeah, dancing bats, and then suddenly, boom. They've made a boat, and it didn't look... It was a pretty... They could have made it look heaps better.
I think they were trying to be genuine.
King of the World at the end.
Yeah.
I think they were trying to be genuine, and it was just a terrible song.
They're trying to be genuine.
It's things like the babushkas that's really trying to just pull one over on the European audience.
And who is the English guy that... what's his name?
Engelbert Humperdinck.
He only got 2 points. What's the fallout from that been like?
I don't know. I haven't been hunting and gathering information on that. Firstly, I was amazed to see Engelbert Humperdinck up there. Just that in itself was bizarre because I'd never. I think I realized I'd never heard him sing before, and he looked so weird. And I'd only ever seen his face on albums in op shops.
And this people have big parties, don't they? Eurovision parties.
Yeah.
And
so,
are there drinking games involved?
There are drinking games.
I was by myself watching it.
There are drinking games involved. Toby Sullivan, who we heard at the start there, I was over at his house, and about 20, 22 people there, everyone watching very carefully, everyone taking it very seriously. But yes, there are drinking games. There's still... Every time that there is a key change, you drink. Every time you see a white suit, you drink. There are these standard rules that are more like nods to the tradition of Eurovision than making fun of it. There used to be a huge thing of costume reveals in Eurovision, starting with Bucks Fizz. Bucks Fizz had a costume reveal where they had the ladies wore long skirts, and then those long skirts came off, and they were wearing short skirts.
Oh, wow.
And that was the first costume
reveal.
What
happened after the short skirts came off?
No, the short skirts didn't come off.
Kept them on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Bucks Fizz, come on.
Okay.
Come on.
If they were Sweden, Zen would be the group sex.
What's the group sex? Do you have the winning song? I'm itching to hear it again.
I don't.
It's so uplifting and catchy. It should be the Olympic anthem. It should be the Olympic.
I think London should take it. You know what? I think Channel 9. If Channel 9 knew what they were doing, they would take on Euphoria and create an excellent winning Olympic montage to it.
That's exactly what it was. It's just, you just feel good. I've been singing it to myself just driving along.
Euphoria.
That's all the words I know, but it's like, I don't do it justice. If you like uplifting songs,
I think we should get Toby Sullivan in here, because Toby Sullivan not only watches all the Eurovision song contests and is a Eurovision expert, he also watches Melody Festivalen. That's the Swedish lead up to.
I haven't heard of that.
I think it's Sweden. I'm not going to get in trouble now. And so watches all of these song competitions and is quite the expert.
Yeah, that's
so,
what you need.
So I'd like to speak to him about the television production of it, and I'll see if he's available to come in. I think that'll be good. Make it for next time you're in, Dave.
So yeah, I'd love to.
You can ask him all the questions.
Should we play it one more time?
No.
Just, come on.
No, I think we should finish the show.
We'll take our shirts off and let's dance around.
We can take our shirts off and rub against each other later, Dave.
Yeah.
I think we should...
Yeah.
It's good to let us do box cutters.
Come on, loosen the tie.
If you watch one thing,
one thing.
Yeah, if you were going to watch one thing, Dave,
bubbles,
what would you watch?
Bubbles.
No bubbles. If you were going to watch one thing this
last
week,
bubble.
Watch.
I was going to watch one thing
yes.
this week. It
yes.
would be... I've been following Laid Series 2.
It's...
Wednesday... Is it Wednesday 9:30?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a repeat on ABC 2, maybe the following day, about 11. Mm-hmm. Enjoying it. Damon Herriman, have you seen...
Is he the creepy guy?
He's the creepy guy. In Laid.
In Laid.
He's
the creepy guy in Laid. Yeah. Excellent work.
It is. He's fantastic.
He's doing great work.
Now, it's funny because that, you know, these auditions come around and I got, was able to audition for the creepy guy.
Right.
But it's one of these things when you get these auditions and the role is described as someone so hideous, no one would want to sleep with him. And you go, oh, that's...
You're not that good an actor.
Hey!
But, and
let's take our shirts off to hear that song.
I think we should take our shirts off and put that song on Dave. After. We don't have to be recording box cutters, but we could just do it for fun. Just, you know.
Yeah, forever till the end of
in
time.
In the sauna later on.
Hmm?
In the sauna later on.
Yeah, the Triple R sauna. Mm, that's exactly where you should do it. Mm. So you audition and then... I wasn't, you know, I thought... That would be great. But when you see Damon do it, you go, that's exactly how that should have been done.
Yeah.
That role of, I can't even remember, Marcus.
That's just superb creepiness.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And it's not too over the top. He just, he does it perfectly. So it's nice when you see something that you think, oh, that would have been a fun, because it seemed like a fun, would have been a fun role to do.
You know, his character's really annoying me this series and didn't annoy me in the first series, and I'm wondering what's changed. Toby Truslove's character.
It feels
unnecessary to the rest of the story, and I'm wondering why it's there. I just wish that
because he actually died in the first season and it's just his ghost.
Maybe maybe the whole thing is just the sixth sense. Is that what you're saying?
Can't actually seem.
Brett Cropley, if you're going to watch one thing this week, what would it be?
I've had a bit of a look at it. It's for me fairly scarce pickings. So I'm going back to Sean McCullough's Mad as Hell.
Did you enjoy that? Did you enjoy ABC's Newstopia?
I did. He's got a yin and yang desk.
That's pretty.
Now,
that's
it's
pretty
not. Fun. It's not an Australia desk with Tasmania for his glass of water. According to TV Fix, Sean gets more than he bargained for when a car he was buying turns out to be an ocean liner. For mad capillarity like that, check it out.
Amazing Race Australia.
Oh,
yeah. Amazing Race Australia. Amazing Race Australia. I know it sounds like I said three things, but they're all the one thing.
Oh, they three
all,
times.
They're all Amazing Race Australia, 9 o'clock Wednesday night on Channel 7. I'm so excited. I'm so excited because first season of Amazing Race Australia was superb. It was really excellent, amazing raceness. And
you're not in this one, are you?
I'm not in this.
That's not why we took that big break.
Yeah, that is not why we took. No, I was I was in New York.
Could you just find out where they're filming it and do it on your as well? Just
they
on
keep
the sidelines.
They keep it secret. Really, it's an extraordinarily well kept secret. Plus, it would be very expensive.
I was going to think that you'd need about $50,000 to keep up.
Yeah, probably about $50,000 to keep up, and you also need someone writing clues for you. You need to find out what the clues are.
I'd just watch there that. Before I'd, them and get their clues.
I'd watch The Amazing Race about a couple of people who follow The Amazing Race around trying to beat them everywhere.
Would you watch that? Would you watch that from your turning around chair?
Yeah, I'd turn around. I'd hit the button, turn around.
That's a show, Dave.
That's it. The Amazing Race. Racing the Amazing Race.
I like it. Do it. Pitch it.
Done. I'm writing that down now. Who do I pitch it to? What channel is it on, did you say?
Channel 7.
Who's in charge of that?
Kerry Stokes.
Kerry Stokes. Got it.
Hey, when I cast my pod, it's with the box cutters in mind. Box cutters. Pod. Cast. Done. Pork is on the table.
You may have noticed that Toby Halligan's not here.
Mm. Mm, I was looking for him at the door and expecting maybe a last-minute thing.
No.
But no. Where is he?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
He just said, I'm not, like at about 4 o'clock this afternoon, just said, I'm not coming in today.
Hey, here's some pork we didn't touch on. I didn't notice the product placement in Lilyhammer. Apparently, yes. It was delayed. Its broadcast in Norway was delayed because of the product placement, which is illegal there.
Yes.
Did you? There was.
What was it?
There was a giant Macca's bag on the police desk, front and centre.
Oh, was there?
Yeah. Yeah. And I
think that was paid for?
Well, it seemed unnecessary.
It was too obvious.
You never saw
them eat it.
No, never ate it. There's just a Macca's bag there. And
Can't you just blur it out for Norway and have it visible for Hulu and Germany? Well, isn't that the answer?
But this is the thing. Like, people do eat Macca's, and you do see Macca's bags on desks. But the second I saw it, that's an ad.
There's money there.
That's how they made
this series.
Someone's, yeah. Decided to press pause straight down for a loose change menu.
I don't think we touched on Awake got cancelled.
Awake did get cancelled, and if you are watching Awake on Foxtel, I think it's on W. I'm not entirely sure. If you're watching it on the final episode, is an absolute corker.
Yeah, that's a good show.
Firstly, it finishes off the series. So if it was just one series, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Although they didn't know that was the finish.
At this stage, they didn't know. So it does also leave enough open for another series. But it does finish off the series pretty nicely. The entire series, though, is fantastic. I really, really loved it. I thought it was a great mix of psychological drama and just regular cop procedural.
And if you want some closure, a friend of Boxcutters, Kyle Killen, who was also the creator of Awake, answered some questions about what was actually going on at InsideTV at EW.com. Which you can probably find, and we should put the link up on the blog.
We'll have a link up on the blog. If you're not doing anything this Thursday night, Thursday the 31st of May, or if you are doing something...
Tom Lane, isn't it?
No. Or if you are doing something and it's not as good as this thing I'm about to mention, I am going to be hosting a night at Acme talking about Sons of Anarchy with Clementine Ford and Andrew Murford. Mm. And we'll be talking about the feminist aspects of Sons of Anarchy and also what it's like being on the set at Sons of Anarchy at Sam Crow Central.
Is that where you've been?
That's where I've been. Oh. I've been at Sam Crokey Central, which is why my voice ended up like this.
Gosh.
And that brings us to the end of Box Cutters episode 307. I want to say thanks to everybody who is excellent. Until next week, my name is Josh Canal.
I'm Dave Lawson.
I continue to be Brett Crumpley. Thanks for listening to Box Cutters. Catch us again next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
I tell you what would be fun if we took our pants off and put on that Euphoria song from Eurovision.
Well, my pants are already off.
And hey, let's be careful out there.
Box Cutters is produced by Josh Canal with Brett Crumpley and John Richards and help from Courtney Hocking and Dave Lawson. John Richards edited this episode. Peter Wilson from Soup Giant is the man behind making sure you can actually download stuff. He's good that way. We'd like to thank 3RRR, the greatest radio station in the world, for letting us use their studios to record this podcast. Find them on the web at rrr.org.au or 102.7 FM if you listen to radio the old-fashioned way. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can show your appreciation by leaving a positive review on iTunes or maybe just telling some friends what they're missing out on. You can also donate actual cash money to us by using the donate button at the top of our website. Donating helps keep the show alive and makes us smile. Our website is boxcutters.net and you can find all sorts of ways to contact us there. Yeah.
Get him off!
неймовірний номер, як і пісня, як і Лоріан просто зачаровують.
Hi, this is Pete Smith. You've been listening to, or have just missed, Box Cutters.